Dog here, and this time around we've got an interview with Matt Dwyer, a great guitar slinger player from the land of Oz, and been doing some great stuff, releasing some new albums, and well-regarded musician right across the board. And thanks for coming in the studio, Matt.
My pleasure, Salty. How you doing?
Oh, that's good. Look, you're well-regarded as one of Australia's best guitarists, and certainly all the times I've seen you play, you certainly live up to that expectation, and I'm sure our listeners have heard Matt Dwyer on the Swing Shift Blues and Roots would agree with that. So when did you start playing guitar? Is it something you were born with, or you had to work hard at?
Oh, no, I worked hard, real hard at it. I started when I was about 12. I was nuts about this girl who was a guitar player. She played guitar, and I thought if I could play guitar, I could, you know, sit next to her and at least try and impress her. Failed miserably.
Yeah.
But I kept playing guitar, and there wasn't really much going on in the early 80s musically when you were, you know, sort of, you know, 12 years old.
Yeah.
Then when I was 14, my brother took me to see Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble at Sydney Opera House. And that was life-changing.
Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. It's like the earth shuddered on its axis.
Yeah.
You know, oh, nothing was the same. As soon as I heard that, I was just knocked out completely.
And had you heard of him before?
I'd heard of him. I'd heard Couldn't Stand the Weather, but I'd never really heard blues, per se.
Right.
And that was the first time I heard the blues live. It was the first concert I ever went to. And as soon as I could, I rushed out and bought everything I could, like all the guitar magazines with Stevie Ray Vaughan in them, and he'd talk about his influences. And so through being a fan of his, then reading what he was into, then I heard about Albert King and Freddie King and Muddy Waters, and, you know, all the way back to, you know, Robert Johnson and Son House and Charlie Patton.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So when you say it's life-changing, that was it? You were going to be a guitarist?
Yep. Didn't want to be anything else.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you said it was hard to learn the techniques. You've got a lot of great techniques, and I want to talk about your different styles, because you do play a lot of different styles of guitar.
Oh, it's I like different kinds of music.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is it something you've worked hard at?
Absolutely, yeah. So, many, countless hours of practicing.
So it's from your point of view, it's a practice thing that does it.
That's one of the things. I mean, I practice all the time, listening to lots and lots of records. Going to see as many shows as I can, seeing other guitar players, gigging. I've been playing in bands since I was in high school.
Yeah.
And I've been all over the country a couple of times with quite a few different bands. And, you know, one show is worth, you know, a month of practice.
Right.
And I play as often as I can.
Yeah.
You know, which is why I get down to the blues jam as often as I can. And,
yeah.
Because that's always a chance to play and step out and try different things and try new things. And that's what keeps you going, I think.
Yeah, that's great. Now, you were with the Bondi Cigars in Sydney originally.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the first band you were in?
Oh, no. No, I'd been in quite a few bands before that. Before the Cigars, I was in another blues band called Beachhead Blues. I played for a while in a country band called the Love Rustlers.
Yeah.
It was kind of fun because I'm one of these closet country kind of guys. I do like good country music, and I'm talking about, you know, George Jones, Hank Williams, Lefty Frizzell, guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not the horrible middle of the road syrupy Nashville thing that a lot of people closely associate with country music.
Sure.
The Bondi Cigars was about, I don't know, my third band or something like that.
Right.
But I'd already, you know, put in 2.5 years on the road with Beachhead, you know, before I was asked to join the Cigars.
Right.
And those 2.5 years on the road were just invaluable, just playing almost every night, touring all the time. It was great. Everything you do like that just helps. You know, it takes you further.
Sure. A Beachhead was like a rock band?
No, it was a blues band.
Blues band?
Well, it started out as a blues band. We were kind of young and crazy, so we were listening to a lot of blues, but we were also listening to a lot of other stuff. So we were into reggae and funk and soul, you know, listen to a lot of Stax, a lot of Motown, lots of Jamaican stuff. And it just got weirder and weirder and weirder until Beachhead, who was the actual singer, just, it was too weird for him. He said, I can't take it anymore.
Is that right?
So the band broke up.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what I was going to do.
And what were you doing with them? Just guitar?
Just playing. I played guitar and slide guitar.
Okay.
Yeah, no singing. I only started singing. I didn't even sing with Cigars.
Right.
I only started singing about, I think, 2.5-3 years ago.
Okay.
Just out of necessity.
And there's quite a bit of singing on your last two albums.
That's right. Well, on the last album I sang. On the EP before that, that's all instrumental. There is a vocal track, but it's not me singing.
And that's one just called Matt Dwyer Trio.
Trio.
Matt Dwyer, I get that right, Solly.
Yeah, pop your teeth back in and say that.
Matt Dwyer Trio.
Some guy down in Geelong a couple of months ago, he misspelt my name in a gig guide and it came out as Matt Dwyer. And then some wag suggested, well, it sounds like he works in a carpet factory.
Or a funeral parlour. One of those. Uh-huh. So you, on that one, you were all instrumental on the Matt Dwyer Trio.
Yeah, that was the Hammond Organ Trio.
Yeah, which you'll play some tracks for that for people to listen to.
Sure.
And the latest one's called Who Loves You?
Who Loves You?
That's right, which has got singing and it's all original stuff.
That's right, I wrote all the songs.
Yeah, let's head off with the title track from Matt Dwyer's new album, Who Loves You? And this track, of course, Who Loves You?
You tell me that you love me. Do I feel the way you do? I'm crazy about you, baby, and everything you do. Who loves you, baby? Call me on the telephone. Come over, baby, I'm all alone. Who loves you, baby? Who loves you, baby? Well, who loves you, baby? You know that I do. Love me? Do I feel the way you do? I'm crazy about you, baby, and everything you do. Who loves you, baby? Who loves you, baby? Well, who loves you, baby? You know that I do. Well, who loves you, baby?
Who loves you, baby?
Well, who loves you, baby?
Who loves you, baby?
Who loves you, baby?
When you join the Bondi Cigars, they ask you to join as a guitarist.
Yeah.
And what was your experiences like there?
Great. Without saying too much, it was very regimented.
Right.
You know, the band had been going for about 8 years before they asked me to join. So they,
yeah.
The singer Shane and the bass player Al, they had a very definite idea of the band and they had a definite identity. And part of the gig, it's like basically you were just told what to do and when to do it.
Right.
But I didn't mind that because I was, you know, I was quite young and the band was already established. Like I said, they'd been going for over 8 years. They'd already been doing lots and lots of touring. They'd released 4 albums, hell of a lot of festivals. So it was their band, really. Yeah. And the gig was, you just do what you're told.
Right.
But it wasn't bad because it was great experience.
Yeah,
you know, it was just a whole other level of musicianship and touring and professionalism. So it was actually a great experience.
And how long were you with the cigars for?
Only about a year.
Okay.
Only about a year.
And what made you you move to Melbourne after that period?
That's I left the cigars in early 96 and then floundered for a while. And in 97, early 98, I joined a band called the Louisville Sluggers.
Right.
Which were a swing band. It was a horn section and a female singer. And I was with them for 2.5 years.
Okay.
And that was... it was more like just under 2 years.
Right.
And that was great. We did a hell of a lot of TV. We were the house band on a sports variety show on Channel 9.
Right.
Called Sam and the Fat Man. The highlight of which was meeting Dennis Lilly. That was really cool.
Yeah.
And I got him to autograph one of my guitars.
Great.
And one of the other things that involved was actually backing Sam Newman every week. He insisted on singing a song with the band.
Is that right?
Yeah, he fancied himself as a bit of a crooner.
Yeah.
So he'd do Mac the Knife or Lady is a Tramp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did anybody tell him he wasn't?
No. Strangely enough, at rehearsal and at soundcheck, he'd get it really, you know, he was pretty much on it.
Right.
But as soon as we went to air, everything just changed. So every week we'd get really optimistic. It's like, no, he sang it fine. Well, he'll get there. As soon as the red light goes on, we were on air. It just all went to hell in a handbasket.
Is that right?
And I've got the videotapes to prove it.
Great. So you eventually moved down from Sydney to Melbourne,
mm-hmm.
In the land of ice. For all you overseas listeners, Sydney's a bit further north than Melbourne. They think it's warmer, but we actually get more sunshine in Melbourne, I think. But we won't argue into that discussion.
If we're going to get meteorological, and I prefer the Melbourne weather.
Yeah, is that right?
Absolutely. Sydney summers are unbelievable. The humidity is just a killer, and... I don't miss Sydney much.
No. We won't mention that on the air, but we probably will.
Even though it's my hometown.
That's right.
No, I love Melbourne. It's an absolutely great place.
So you came to Melbourne, and what was the musical intent of all that?
To come down and play music. That was the intent. Sydney, the music scene in Sydney was really in its death throes at that stage.
Right.
And I believe it got worse afterwards. On a couple of subsequent trips back to Sydney, I've noticed that there's been quite a few venues opening up and things are getting better.
Yeah.
But it's still nowhere as good as Melbourne. I mean, Melbourne is the live music capital of Australia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's more work down here, there's more venues, there's more musicians, and the level of musicianship is outstanding.
Yes, that's something I've noticed since coming back from Queensland, although Queensland's a wonderful place.
Mm.
The style of musicianship and... the level is so good that you forget how good it is. Mm. Yesterday I was over in Brunswick and then back to Elwood, and everywhere you went there, it was good players playing, and it was amazing.
I think that might have to do with something. I think that might have to do with the weather as well.
Yeah.
Well, because it's so cold most of the time, people stay indoors.
Yeah. I've heard that theory about London too.
Oh, yeah. There's not much to do, but, you know, practice.
Yeah, for sure. During the winter, especially.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Everybody hibernates and writes songs and practices. I think that's why they get so good.
So where have you been playing in Melbourne? What's some of the gigs you've been doing?
I've been playing Manchester Lane pretty regularly with my little big band, which is the band with the horn section. The Zed Lounge, I did that a couple of weeks ago. I'll be back there on Saturday the 16th.
Right.
The Elwood Lounge quite often. I've played at the Lomond, the Bendigo, the Casino, all over the place, really.
Okay, so what's your favourite venue around Melbourne?
Probably Manchester Lane.
Yeah.
It's a big room, really good sound system, good stage. It's a swish place. It's a lot like the old Continental used to be.
Right.
And actually, the little big band wouldn't exist were it not for Manchester Lane, because I've wanted to do something ever since I was with the Sluggers. I wanted to do something with a horn section and a piano.
Yeah.
But it's just unfeasible, and it's very hard to get anybody interested to get that off the ground. Whereas I'd been playing there with my organ trio, and Gavin Wall, who used to be the manager, rang me up. And he said, can you put something bigger together for a Saturday night, you know, with horns and everything? It's like, are you kidding? I'd love to. So I got the phone book out and made some calls. And by the end of the day, I just had a crack band.
Yeah.
And we didn't have any rehearsal. We just showed up.
Yeah.
And played a lot of my favorite swing tunes and R&B tunes and blues tunes. And it was just one of the best gigs ever. It was fantastic.
And you're still playing with the Little Big Band?
Absolutely.
So you, it's a regular thing at Manchester Lane now?
That's right. That's right. We're playing there at least once a month. Right. If you want to check out Manchester Lane's website, manchesterlane.com, you'll find out when we're there.
Great. Mm-hmm. Now, I notice on your profile stuff, you've got a lot of other bands you're playing with, the Magnetones and a few others there. What's the reason for all the different bands?
Well, it's if you've just got one band, it's kind of hard to fit one band into every venue, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Whereas because I like blues, and I like jazz, and I like rockabilly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Magnetones are a three-piece rockabilly band, and Trick Bag is a four-piece blues band, and I've got my Hammond Organ Trio called the Matt Dwyer Trio, and I've got my Little Big Band.
Right.
So that, I guess that keeps me happy.
Yeah.
Because I like playing in all the different formats. It's a different way of playing. It's a, and I can play certain songs and certain kinds of music with some bands that I can't with others.
Well, let's hear a cut from the Matt Dwyer Trio. This track, Coming Home, Baby. If someone had to ask you what's your favourite style, do you have one favourite style or are you pretty eclectic?
Well, it'd have to be more than anything else, probably the blues. Whereas because the blues is, it's so universal. Yeah. I mean, jazz came from the blues, rock and roll came from the blues, rockabilly came from a mixture of blues and country.
Yeah.
So I guess what I love about all the kinds of music, the thing that makes them all connect, what they all have in common is they come from the blues.
Yep.
And that brings with it an emotion, a tonality, a feel, a sentiment. It brings everything about music that I love. And I mean, Frank Sinatra was a huge blues fan.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. So was Hank Williams, and so was Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Louis Armstrong was a great blues trumpeter, even though he kind of wrote the book on jazz.
Yeah.
Charlie Parker loved the blues. He was a great blues alto sax player, even though between him and Dizzy Gillespie, they virtually invented bebop. And I like bebop too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in terms of, if blues is, I guess, you know, the main draw card for you, who are your biggest influences in the blues?
With the guitar playing?
Yep.
Oh, man, so many.
Yeah.
Freddie King. I love Freddie King. Johnny Guitar Watson. Stevie Ray Vaughan, obviously. Jimmy Vaughan. Albert King. Buddy Guy. I love Buddy Guy. Buddy Guy's early stuff when he was recording with Chess and then with Vanguard. I'm not too crazy about the stuff that Buddy Guy's been doing ever since he had his resurgence with, was it Silvertone Records?
Yeah.
With that album, Damn Right I Got the Blues.
Yeah.
It's a bit overkill for me. It's a bit bombastic, I guess.
Yeah, true. Yeah. It could be better.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the it's ferocious playing and it's great singing, but the production, and it's very heavy.
Yeah.
Whereas when you listen to all the stuff that he recorded with Chess as a sideman with Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters, and as a band leader in his own right, he had that beautiful clean tone, playing a Strat through a 1959 Fender Bassman with the horns, and it was swinging as like hell, you know.
Yeah,
it's so cool.
There's a recent album you did with Silvertone called Sweet Tea. Have you heard that one?
I have. That's all the North Mississippi
stuff. Yeah, yeah. It's not bad.
It's great. It's really cool.
We've been playing a bit of that different style of Buddy Guy's Damn Right I Got the Blues, I think. Mm. Yeah, that's for sure. He used to drive a truck too. They tell me when he used to play, do session work in Chicago.
That's right.
So, which is a question for all musicians. Are you now a full-time musician?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am. I don't like work. I really don't. It's kind of a drag because when I was at school, I hated school, and then when it was time to get a job, I didn't want to work either. It's quite sad, really. All I ever wanted to do was play guitar.
Yeah.
And in the last few years, that's turned into singing and songwriting as well.
Sure.
And making albums and being a band leader.
Now, tell me about your new album, Who Loves You. I mean, it's a good album. It's doing well on charts and doing well on sales as well.
Mm.
And obviously, people get a good listen to it on Solly Dog, Blues and Roots.
Yeah, thanks for that.
It's all original material.
That's right.
And you're singing on it.
Yep.
And tell me about some of the tracks. What's some of your favourite tracks on that album?
Oh, that's like asking you who your favourite child is.
Yeah.
I like Who Loves You. I like Every Girl I Meet.
Yeah, first two.
Yeah. I like I guess the weirdest one that I like is there's a tango on there called What Color Are Your Wings?
Yeah.
And it's kind of a departure from all the other material on the album.
Yeah.
But it's the one that most people like the best. I know it's the one that all the women like the most.
Right.
And so if women like it, I think I'm doing something right.
Yeah, there's something sort of emotional about that song.
It is. It's about, it's about falling in love. And it's different because it's not about all the other songs about love going wrong.
Right.
What else is there to write about? But
if it's going right, you're too busy.
Well, it's not interesting.
That's right.
You know.
It's a sad commentary on the world, isn't it?
It is. It is. But What Color Are Your Wings? It's about falling in love, and you know it could be the best thing that's ever happened to you, or it could be the worst.
Sure.
And if you've ever had the experience where love goes wrong, which quite often it does, you kind of rue the day.
That's right. Now tell me, where was this thing produced? This latest CD? Did you have a big hand in the production of it, or
I produced it myself. Whereas all the tracks with double bass and drums and piano and horns were recorded in a shed in Caulfield at Rod Gilbert's house, and the organ trio stuff was recorded at TRAP, which is Trevor Reading Audio Productions. It's a hell of an acronym.
Yeah.
In Sunshine of all places.
Yeah
So if you go to Sunshine, you just can't help but get the blues. Thank you.
I can't tell. You could have come down from heaven or straight from hell. Color of your wings, my love, are they black or are they white? Do you walk on a cloud all day or live an endless night? I smelled your perfume before, I know what you've come looking for. Scratch marks on my back yet to heal, bet you know just how that be. Color of your wings, my love, are they black or are they white? Do you walk on a cloud all day or live an endless night? Perfume before, know what you come looking for. Scratch marks on my back yet to heal, I bet you know just how that feels. Color of your wings, my love, are they black or are they white? Do you walk on a cloud all day or live in endless night?
Matt Dwyer there from The City Who Loves You, and that little cool thing there, What Colour Are Your Wings? Now, who was playing with you on this CD?
Okay, well, I've got Peter Balky on double bass, Jonathan Wade on piano and Hammond organ, Dean Hilson on tenor saxophone, and the living legend Jimmy Sloggett on tenor saxophone as well.
Yeah,
that was kind of, that was a real thrill for me being in the studio with Jimmy. I really wanted to get him on the record because he's a sprightly gentleman of 66 years old.
Right.
And he was in Johnny O'Keefe's original DJs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know that Johnny O'Keefe tune, Sing, Sing, Sing?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that was Jimmy. He played on
that. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, when he was about 20.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah, yes. And so Johnny O'Keefe, the king of Australian rock and roll, and I, we got something in common now.
Fantastic.
I think that's part of the reason I got Jimmy in. Apart from the fact that he's a great player.
Yeah.
He's a great tenor saxophone player. He's got that really great, black, growling, fat tenor sound in the style of, say, King Curtis.
Yeah.
Or Ben Webster. Yeah.
So it's a track on there that features that kind of sound? Which one would you?
Well, there's actually no saxophone solos.
Yeah.
I just wanted to keep the song short and keep the album short. So there's lots of horns on there, but they're all sectioned.
Now, Matt, as a writer of material, what's the hardest part about writing songs?
Trying to write something that hasn't already been done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's if you were, say, in a punk band or a grunge band from Seattle, because they're relatively new art forms, then every field hasn't already been furrowed.
Yeah.
Whereas if you write songs, say, in the blues style or in jazz style, then you're going back right to the beginning of recorded music.
Yeah.
So as long as music has been recorded, there's been these forms of music. So it's hard to... The hardest part is to sound or write something that hasn't been done a million times before.
Right.
That's the tough part.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And do you find that, you know, to get the inspiration to write, do you sit around and listen to stuff, or do you try and block it out so that you try and come up with something fresh?
I do both. I listen to a lot of music. As well as listening to a lot of blues, I'm really, because I'm a real jazz fan, I love jazz and the old jazz songwriters. Even though they probably weren't considered jazz back then, they were popular songwriters.
Yeah.
Guys like, you know, George Gershwin, Ira Gershwin, Cole Porter,
yeah,
Harold Arlen, Johnny Mercer, those guys.
They were just writers in those days.
But they were brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, they wrote incredible songs. You know, these amazing 32-bar symphonies,
yeah,
if you will. So I get a lot from that, and I listen to those guys a lot. I mean, when you hear a lyric say, like, was it Lorenz Hart, I wish I were in love again, you know?
Yeah.
When love congeals, it starts to reveal the faint aroma of performing seals.
I'm not going there.
How can you not live up to that? You know, it's a hell of a lyric. Or you listen to anything by, you know, say Night and Day or I've Got You Under My Skin.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are great, great songs.
Yeah.
And it makes it hard and it makes it easy at the same time to write something.
So do you find you write stuff and think, oh, that's just in a pattern, throw it out and start again?
Well, it depends. Well, see, if you're writing blues songs, you can't help but be at least slightly formulaic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, and that's the hard part. Even though it's kind of restrictive, it's still very liberating at the same time. It's kind of hard to describe. So when I'm at home, I listen to music constantly, but I actually go for a lot of long walks along the beach. And
yeah.
Through parks and just around neighborhoods. I go for long rides on my push bike. And I never use my Walkman.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when I'm out, if you've got a Walkman, if you're listening to music, then obviously that's going to stop something coming to you.
Sure.
But I always carry my little pad and a pen. You know, and if ever I go traveling, I take a tape recorder or a Discman or something like that.
Sure.
A mini Discman.
Yeah, and so look, the old perennial question, what comes first, the music or the lyric?
The lyric.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Mostly the lyric comes first. When I'm writing down the lyric kind of dictates the feel of the song.
Yeah.
You know.
You don't get a riff and think, oh, I need a rhyme to work with that?
I get riffs. Yeah, you bet I get riffs. And I just store them. You know, I've got a little studio at home.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, sit down and record riffs for a while. And they can kind of be transposed into any key, really.
Right.
So when I get an idea for a lyric, sometimes I just think, I'll have to come up with something for that. Or it's like if I come up with a lyric, if I come up with a verse, the opening line is always the hard part.
Yeah.
Once you get the opening line, then that kind of dictates where the song pretty much goes, I find. But songwriting is not, it's not a science.
No.
It's kind of an art and it's kind of a craft. All at one time.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
you don't just produce it. Well, some people will produce stream of consciousness stuff and they just spit it out and there it is.
That's right.
Or other people like hone and refine and adjust and... So which type are you?
I'm not sure. I'm not entirely sure. Like I said, I like all the old songwriters and I'm a huge fan of Tom Waits as well.
And his stuff sounds like it's stream of consciousness a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah, but that's the trick that he pulls because his songwriting is actually extremely refined.
Right.
And a lot of his songwriting is actually extremely economical.
Yeah.
To this day, I mean, if you listen to a song like The House Where Nobody Lives on Mule Variations or on Bone Machine, there's a track called... excuse me. Blind Love.
You get the respirator on, please.
Yeah. Thanks very much. Nurse. I've still got my health. Nothing wrong with my lung.
I'll edit that.
Thanks.
Maybe. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so weights can actually be extremely economical. But with songwriting, I just write the way I write, really. Yeah, it's... I like to write simple songs.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a simple kind of guy, so I like simple songs.
So catchy, good swing.
Yeah, that's. I like songs that you can hum.
Yeah.
You know, after hearing it for the first time.
Yeah.
Because the problem with a lot of blues acts or blues artists is that they don't have a pop sensibility. It's almost like if you're a blues guy, then pop is a dirty word.
Yeah.
Whereas way back when, you know, guys like Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and John Lee Hooker were, you know, kings of pop.
Yeah.
You know, when Leonard and Phil Chess started up Chess Studios, every song was like 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
At the most. Yeah. And they were made for jukeboxes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the great thing about all those great songs is you listen to a Muddy Waters tune, you can hum it as soon as you've heard it.
That's true. And well, on this album, that Every Girl I Meet keeps sticking in my head.
Oh, cool. I'm worried about that.
And that's Every Girl I Meet. It's living on the other side of town. It's just like you sort of drive along to it, or you move along to it.
Yeah, it's a good driving record.
Yeah.
I heard it in a car for the first time when I went back to Sydney. And I was driving in, I was in my brother's car. We were driving down to the folks' place in Kanhooka. And I said, I haven't heard the whole record in a car. Can we put it on? He said, yeah, all right.
Wants to talk. Well, every girl I meet lives on the other side of town. I'm looking for some loving and there ain't no love around. Sitting here so lonesome, it's getting me down. Well, every girl I meet lives on the other side of town.
It's not a bad driving record.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I like listening to music in the car. A lot of people do. And I mean, a lot of people listen to music primarily in the car.
Well, that's where you get a chance to switch off and and digest it a bit, whereas there's always something else going on when you're somewhere else.
That's right. Or when you're at home, a lot of people put on the telly or something.
Well, that's right. Or, yeah, and it's a sort of private thing in the car.
That's right. That's right. I mean, most people put on, if they're going to listen to music at home, they'll put it on when they're reading a book or doing the dishes or something like that.
That's right.
And it's actually quite rare. I like to do this. I don't get much of a chance to, but it's a very rare thing. If you think about it, when was the last time you put a CD on or put a record on and just sat down or laid down and did nothing but listen to the record?
Yeah. Can't think of it.
Yeah. Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
Whereas it's always something you do when you're doing something else. When you put on a CD when you're doing something else. Whereas driving a car, that's kind of as close as you come to.
Although when I was 14, I'm sure... you know, getting an album was a very big event and you'd sit down with reverence.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And listen to it, you know.
In the lotus position.
That's right. Now, your equipment, the sort of sound that you produce, Matt, obviously a lot of it's in the equipment as well as your technique on the guitar. Could you tell us something about, you know, what your favourite guitars are and how you work that sound?
Sure. How I work the sound? Well, that's a tough one. It's amazing. It's a combination of quite a few different things. I find that everybody who plays an instrument has... I haven't heard of a better term for it. I just call it body tone.
Yeah.
It's like if I took your guitar plugged into your amp the way you set it up, I'd still sound like me.
Yeah.
And you'd sound like you. If you played my guitar and my amp, you'd still sound exactly like you. You know what I mean?
Just the way you pull the strings
It's inherent. It's in your skin.
Yeah.
It's in your body.
Right.
You know, whereas, and I proved this years ago when I was in Beachhead, because I really loved the other guitar player's tone, and he had a Strat with a Silverface Fender Super Reverb, and I had a Strat with Texas Special pickups and a Deluxe Reverb, and we were out on tour somewhere, and we did one of these awful gigs where there was nobody there, and
yeah.
I said, look, for the next set, can we swap over gear? Because he always got great tone, and he always liked my tone. I said, well, let's swap over for a set. We'll play each other's guitars.
Yeah.
And he sounded exactly like him using my gear, and I sounded exactly the same using his gear.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It
wasn't the gear.
Nope. It was just how it came out of our hands.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Tone's all in the fingers. There's... I mean, there are guys out there that will, you know, go out and buy a Fender Strat and a Super Reverb and a Tube Screamer in the hope of sounding like Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah.
Well, it's impossible. You'll get near that, but you'll never sound exactly like him because he's a different guy and everybody sounds different.
Now, do you play without effects or you do it all from the machine or...?
I use a few effects.
Yeah.
Very subtle ones. I use tremolo.
Yeah.
And I use just a boost.
Yeah,
and a little analog delay,
right?
And that's it.
That's
all I use. Yeah, no chorusing, no phasing, no.
And the rest is done, barehanded.
Absolutely,
fantastic. Well, some great sounds you get out of that machine.
Thanks, man.
Now you also, I think, I notice one of the differences for me, and you know, I'm no expert. I'm in my own lunchtime, but one of the things about an accomplished guitarist is they learn about phrasing.
Mm.
And I noticed, you know, you've got some great phrasing and you know when to stop.
You
know when to hold a note, that sort of stuff. So is that something you found that you had that rhythm in you or did you sort of listen to a lot of stuff or did you have a teacher who sort of brought that out in you?
Once again, it just came from listening to a lot of records.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But some people listen all the time and don't get it.
Well, some people, I don't think people listen. They hear, but they don't listen.
Right.
To get all esoteric on you.
Yeah.
It's a strange one. But, I mean, I got a lot of that from listening to jazz horn players as well.
Right.
If you're going to be a guitar player, you should listen to horn players because horn players have to breathe.
And they stop. Yeah, exactly. They stop. They stop and then move on to the next phrase.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I think a good solo should have the same elements, whether it's on a trumpet or a saxophone or a guitar or a piano.
Yeah.
All of the things that make it great are universal to each instrument, and it's you have to breathe.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and all great musicians have one thing in common: they have great phrasing. That's why I love Miles Davis.
Yeah.
And that's why I love Ben Webster.
Yeah.
The tenor sax player King Curtis, not the wrestler King Curtis. King Curtis, the tenor sax player, and Ray Charles as a singer had amazing phrasing.
Right.
Incredible phrasing, and Frank Sinatra.
Yep.
His vocal phrasing was just otherworldly. Incredible.
Yeah, and it's one of those key things that one of the problems with hearing a lot of music that's not as great as the next is that there's just too many notes.
Yeah.
No breathing space. It's just very technically competent, but it doesn't sound pleasing. And often people say, very technically competent player, but I didn't like it.
Mm.
You know, what's wrong with me? I didn't like all that.
That's right.
You know, and yet a few notes can sound better.
Mm.
And so I think some of the phrasing on yours, you know, exhibits those sort of qualities. So we'll try and we'll play a track to demonstrate that.
Okay.
Let's hear another cut from the Matt Dwyer Trio. This one, Palava, so that guitar phrasing. Yeah, it was interesting what you're saying about phrasing on the guitar, and I think that's something that, people being taught guitar. Now, you do some guitar teaching.
I do.
And with your young charges, or they might be old charges for all I know.
Oh, well, my youngest student is 9 and my oldest is 67.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he plays Dobro, the oldest one.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Ken Cumming. Yeah.
And when you're teaching guitars, that's some of the stuff you have to deal with, you know, in terms of phrasing as well as technique? And
Sure. There's there are a few exercises that are good for teaching phrasing. Because of where I teach, we're both sitting on chairs and we're playing. And I say, okay, now every few notes, actually take the hand off the guitar, your fretting hand, and put it on your knee for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then go back, you know.
Yeah.
Just stop for a while, you know. And then I'll play them records. And it's like you listen to, like I was saying before, Miles Davis, Charlie Parker, Ben Webster, even though they could blow like nobody's business, they knew when to take a breath. And that's a great thing about listening to horn players, is that they have to breathe.
Yeah.
So they have to actually take the horn out of their mouth for a minute. Yeah. They have to stop playing. And it's the silence and it's the space between the notes that gives it so much dimension and so much effect.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Having said that, there are some great guitar players that are just beautiful phrases, like Buddy Guy.
You know,
once again, his phrasing is just unbelievable. There's a guy originally from Perth. He was in Sydney for quite a few years, and he's back in Perth, a guy named David Brewer,
right?
Who is the guitar player in the last lineup of the Dynamic Hypnotics.
Oh, yes.
And then he was in the Mighty Reapers.
Yep.
And he is, I mean, there's some great guitar players out there, but he's my all-time favourite Australian blues guitar player. He's, I'm a real fan of his. And his phrasing was impeccable, just unbelievably good. His rhythm playing was superb. He was just as close to perfection as you could hear in a guitar player.
Right.
He was amazing.
Great. And what was his name again?
Dave Brewer.
Dave Brewer. We'll try and track some of that down.
Yeah, on the Mighty Reapers records. I think there's about 4 or 5 Mighty Reapers albums, and I think they're all still in print.
Great.
Yeah, Troubled People's a bit of a favourite. It's got their arrangement of Cold Cold Feeling on it, the T-Bone Walker song.
Yes, yep.
Which is about as close to an apotheosis as one could hear in a blues guitar player, I guess.
Fantastic. Well, we'll track it down for the listeners out there. And
you can borrow my copy.
I'll borrow your copy, Van. We might even demonstrate it on the show.
Yeah, I'll bring it around.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic, mate. You're on. We'll buy it as well, of course. You know.
Better still.
Now, Matt, you've done some work in television, we mentioned before, and also film. Do you want to tell us about that?
When I was in Sydney, I did quite a bit of session work, and because I play a lot of different, not styles of music, but also different instruments as well.
Yeah,
I play slide guitar, you know, bottleneck guitar.
Sure.
And I got into that hearing Rykuda playing on soundtracks. Like the first one I heard was Southern Comfort,
right?
Which was a film which had Powers Booth and Fred Ward and Keith Carradine in it, and it was about Louisiana. Army Reserve,
right.
in the bayou, and Rye just did this beautiful atmospheric slide guitar, and I got hooked on that. And then, you know, I got into Blind Willie Johnson and Muddy Waters and Earl Hooker and, you know, all the other guys, Dwayne Allman.
Yeah,
there's some great slide guitar players, and it was just, I was amazed at what you could do with a piece of glass or a piece of steel on your finger. And also play baritone guitar and lap steel, a little banjo and mandolin.
Yeah.
I got calls from a few different people who are making soundtracks, and I got to play on, I did quite a few things for TV shows, and but there were two. There was a feature film called The Monkey's Mask, which was a Sam Lang film.
Right.
Which had Susie Porter and Kelly McGillis in it.
Yep.
And there was a doco mini-series called Africa, Cape Town to Cairo,
yep.
Which I did with a producer and a composer named Felicity Fox. And they were both released on CD, and both of them were nominated for ARIA Awards.
The Australian Recording Industry stuff.
That's right.
And did they win?
No.
But it's hard to get nominated, I guess. Yeah.
Oh, it's just an honour to be nominated.
Oh,
well, we didn't win ARIAs, but I only found out a couple of weeks ago that The Monkey's Mask did get the, I think it was the Australian Screen Guild,
right,
award for best soundtrack of that year.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And that was your soundtrack?
I played on it. I was just a session player on it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
I wrote a few tunes, but they're mostly composed by other people.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's good stuff. I mean, that's something certainly we weren't aware. That was when your Sydney days.
That's right.
And have you thought of doing more of that in the future?
I'd love to. It's just a matter of meeting the right people. And
right.
Plus, being in a new town, yeah. You know, generally composers and filmmakers, they've got their guys already. You know?
Sure.
So it took me quite a few years to get to that level in Sydney. So coming to Melbourne, it's like starting all over again.
That's right.
But I'm not complaining. You know, I'd like to do more soundtracks for films, but I'd like to actually compose them myself.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep. So where's the future take you, Matt?
Hopefully around the world, Zoldy.
Is that your plan?
Yes, I would like to travel the world playing music. Now that I have the album through Black Market and through shows such as your own and get some more exposure,
yeah.
I'd like to go to Europe and I'd like to go to the States.
Right.
And you know, do a lot of festivals and what have you.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Now, have you got plans in the wings or...?
We have plans to make plans.
You have plans to make plans.
Plans to make plans. I think we have a contingency to make a plan to make further plans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to go there because I'm getting very confused. But
we're talking about how we'd like to do it, but there's nothing firm yet.
And would you do that with a band or on your own?
Well, because I'm a solo artist, because the album is just Matt Dwyer, It's very, very hard and very expensive to take a band out of town.
Sure.
Because you've got transport, you've got accommodation, per diems, all that kind of stuff. Plus, guys have to... It's hard to get guys that can tour because, you know, everybody else has other commitments.
Yeah.
You know, what have you. But if... what I do is I can fly to, say, Adelaide and use a band in Adelaide, or I can fly to Sydney and use a band there, or fly to Brisbane and use a band up there.
Yeah.
So I just fly myself around and pick up bands along the way. A lot like Chuck Berry.
Yep.
A lot like many, many, many guys in the States do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what we do is I fly in the day beforehand, having sent the guys the CD and charts and what have you and notes, and we rehearse up for a day and then we do the shows.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So that would... And you've got a preference? Europe, the UK, the US? Where's your preference?
I'd like to go everywhere. I don't, having not been to the US or the UK yet,
right?
I guess I'd really like to go to America first, just because, well, you know, all my favorite music comes from there, and it's such a big place. Europe would be great too. You know, big fan of history. England would be great, but I've not been compelled to go there as a traveler per se, although. Any place is good to play, really.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to go to Ireland, love to go to England, Scotland, I'd love to go to Italy, France. Yeah.
And they love the blues there, too.
Well, it's such a universal kind of music.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of any country where it's kind of banned, I guess.
Yeah. You know, it's well, maybe in Soviet Russia, but that's no longer.
No.
I've got a lot of listeners in Russia, so...
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, howdy to all the Russian people.
We've got a trip for Matt to Siberia if we can organise it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Love to do that.
So being a full-time musician, I mean, a lot of musicians travel, and obviously you've been in Melbourne for a while and earning a living that way. What's some of the tough things about being a full-time guitarist for anybody out there who's planning on this career?
Career is a good word for it. That's an interesting word for it. What's tough about it? Well, obviously, every now and then it's a bit tricky to pay your rent. So
yeah.
You have to ring up the real estate agent and say, look, I'm going to be a few days late. Can you help me out? Or
yeah.
Stuff like that. You know, the poverty.
Yeah.
If you like eating, then you're going to have problems.
Right.
But it's... it's really not a financial decision, and I think it's really not a decision at all. I don't think anybody chooses to be a musician. It's just that it happens. You know?
Right.
It's like when you hear born-again Christians say, you know, I didn't find God, God found me. It's like that with music.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You got no choice in the matter. You just have to play and...
That's it. It isn't a choice. You just go ahead and do it.
Right.
And I think it helps if people tell you not to as well.
Right.
Because
it's a bit of a rebellion there.
Absolutely, because you just want to prove them wrong.
Yeah.
But it's like I say, it's all the great musicians pretty much live, just got by.
Yeah.
You know, there's a great story about, Yeah, when the Stones went to Chicago in 1962 on their first tour of the States, and they went to Chess Studio, and Muddy Waters was on top of a ladder painting the ceiling. And he was just doing that to make some bucks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Keith Richards almost fell over. It's like King of the Blues.
That's right.
Standing on top of a, on a step ladder, you know, getting whitewash on his face, you know.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't let those things deter you.
Yeah.
I didn't.
No. No, you can't. Well, there's interesting comments. Well, look, thanks for coming in, mate. You've given us a great insights into what makes Matt Dwyer. I'll get this. I'm going to have to get my teeth fixed.
I know the name of a good dentist. It's just around the corner. Actually, I'm playing at his house on New Year's Eve.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Matt Dwyer, too.
That's right.
Thanks for coming in, Matt, and giving us a great insight into your music and where it's been, where it's going.
Oh, real pleasure. Thanks for inviting
me. If we finish off from one of your albums, what track should we play?
You're asking me what?
Yeah, so let's go out with a Matt Dwyer selection.
Well, how about Blues for Stew?
Okay.
Yeah.
Blues for Stew.
Yeah, for Stuart Speed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Matt.
My pleasure.
We'll catch you around.
Thanks.
Yeah, you've been listening to an interview with Matt Dwyer, Solly Dog, at www.solly.com.au. And if you want to get onto some Matt Dwyer music, get onto blackmarketmusic.com.au in the land of Oz.